All right, everybody, welcome to the Chips and Tips podcast. I'm Tim Paul with Toolpath, and today we have my buddy Ben Engel, fellow toolpather. I'm trying to do a kind of get to know series with, I think we have some amazing people at Toolpath. Ben is definitely one of those. So welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Yeah. When I think of Ben, you're a content manager, a kind of jack of many trades at Toolpath, which is kind of the theme for many of us, right? But when I think of you, I think of, you know, a young engineer, had some fun experiences, made lots of cool stuff, have a very impressive shop. But when I kind of first followed Toolpath, you were, I'm messing it up. What was your title when I started?
Yeah, so I was technical operations manager, which was, I forget what my like actual term was going to be. And I was like, Justin, can I have like a really cool term? You know, so he's like, what about technical operations manager? I was like, that's it right there.
Love it.
A little bit of background on that. And we can dive in more, but I started at Toolpath with the understanding of kind of managing the shop. And I'd never managed a shop before other than, you know, kind of pilling around in my shop. And it was definitely an eye-opening experience to focus on not just like making parts. We were taking on Xometry jobs and parts with the help of Toolpath, kind of using the shop as an R&D tool. And I got to focus on some really fun stuff, like the processes of a shop. So I guess I kind of lived up to the technical operations manager aspect of things, but it was good.
Yeah. So from there, right around the time I started, I think Al and I were starting a real similar time. You guys were doing a bunch of Xometry stuff, which I think was kind of perfect for the time, right? Like take in real jobs, you know, bang on the software, kind of steer the development of the future of Toolpath. And I think one of the things that Al and I were thinking was we got this great personality of a person, and we probably shouldn't be doing Xometry work, right? We shouldn't be kind of nailed in by these sometimes often, you know, silly deadlines. And then we couldn't share pretty much any of that stuff. So Al's our CEO for anybody that doesn't know that you should know, but we were at Autodesk, you know, building Fusion, and a big part of kind of what we were kind of sharing so much of what we were doing. So we transitioned your role basically machinist to content manager. And one thing at Toolpath is we're moving fast and changing quickly, right? So I remember having that conversation with you and everybody on my team for a long time. It's like, you better get comfortable being agile. So you've handled that amazingly well. But let's talk about, here's I'll kind of give you an overview of how I want to do this. So let's talk a little bit about how that transition has been for you. We'll keep it kind of short because we're going to get a little deeper, you know, later, because I want to do almost like a chronological history of who has been. But how has that transition been for you? So it's been a year and a few months, right? A year and a handful of months.
Yeah. It was like right after Al started. Yeah. And I've got a really fun story. I tell everybody I was at Toolpath before it was cool. I got to introduce Toolpath a month after I started. I really didn't know much about the software at all. And I was told that I was going to fly to Las Vegas for AU, introduce Toolpath, do a demo in front of, I think it was like 6 or 7 executives at Autodesk. And one of those was Al. And I remember after like the 45-minute demo, he grabbed my computer out of my hands. I'm like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, this doesn't suck. And, you know, he's told the story too, but it was so cool to be on the other side. That was actually, that was 2 years ago, November something. Yeah. And I'm sure you were probably there too, Tim.
I should have been. I would have been in that meeting, but I'm a dum-dum and I broke my ankles. Shortly
man,
before that.
Yeah.
Celebrate real quick. Celebrate anybody that follows me. Today is literally the first day in 6.5 months that I haven't been with a neck collar after breaking my neck.
Yeah.
But so I got to share that with you. Thanks.
No, well, we weren't recording, but we hopped on the call, and seeing you without the neck brace was just amazing. I was like, let's go.
So that's a fun story. I've heard that story from a few different people now. And that was a fun, probably I imagine a pretty important time in your life.
It was,
moment in your life. Right.
It felt like I made the right decision because we had a 45-minute meeting. It turned into like 3 hours of these executives just walking around with us. They're like, oh, you should connect with this person. Then after this session, they're like, you know, I would come up and be like, oh, you know, talk to Kevin, you know, Kevin Schneider or whatever. And it was one of those moments where, and this was also a moment when I decided to pursue Toolpath that actually kind of came to me. So we'll talk about that. But it was one of those things where I was just like, oh, this is that we could change the future. Like this, like if people at Autodesk are excited about this, I feel like I, you know, made the right bet. And I remember Al, after he started, you know, we had a conversation and he's like, I think I remember you. And he's like, tell me what you're doing at Toolpath. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm machining parts and dialing stuff in for the shop. And it was fun, but it was actually really stressful too. And that was probably a good thing because it developed a huge sympathy for the people that I talk to every day. Now I'm doing more customer success stuff and I've had a couple people cancel on me even today. And they're like, hey, I've got a rush job. I said, say less, hang up. I'll talk to you later. Because I have that, you know, that personal that feel, empathy. Right.
Yeah.
And, he's like, so what are you doing? And I was telling him and he's like, that's so cool. Does anybody know you're working on that? And I was like, no, we can't, you know, we can't show anything. And he's like, all right, that's got to stop. I still want you making parts, but you're too valuable or like Toolpath needs to be like known. And that's kind of why the content role kind of got thrown on me. But I remember he's like, hey, this is a huge deviation from what you're doing. Do you want to still be at Toolpath? And he gave me the choice, of course. And I said, I'll be the janitor. I don't care. I freaking love Toolpath. Because awesome. The culture is just, I mean, you know, Tim, like it's phenomenal. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I've said to many of bosses when they've asked if I was okay with whatever project they were putting me on, I'll clean the toilet. I don't care. I'm here to work. Put me where you think I'll be the most value. Luckily that hasn't been cleaning the toilet yet, but okay. So I like to do a little, lightning round. So let's see if I came up with some fun questions. And if anybody hasn't listened to the last couple of these I've done, I'm actually terrible at making it a true lightning round. So I'm working on, try to get a little better every day. So let's see.
The lightning round that takes a half an hour with Kevin Schneider.
Yeah. Lightning round with Tim. Put your seatbelt on. Okay. So what's the first thing you ever made that sparked something sparked something inside you?
Yeah. I think it was when I decided to build an electric guitar in woodshop class. And realize that's not like a project that most people take on. And this is a lightning round, but I'll just say is it lightning for me or just you? All right.
Both. We're going to see how this goes.
The shop teacher loved to make everybody else's projects. And long story short, I was made like an example out of everybody of like what not to do. He would throw the red thing on the wall, shut everything down, tell people I was doing stuff wrong. I got like a B- on an electric guitar that like actually played. It didn't play very well, but I think he had something out for me, but that was actually what sparked my whole interest in CNC. Cause I was like, this was a ton of work. How did they mass produce these things? And of course I go on YouTube and just, you know, mind blown. So
yeah, that's awesome. I love that story.
Junior year of high school.
Cool. I have this is where it becomes less lightning round. I have a pretty big disappointment in our whole country that there's almost no wood shops in junior high anymore. And that's where many, many people I know that got into making things for a living got that spark in junior high. So, okay. First CNC machine you ever saw in action. That's different than touching or playing with. And maybe it's not.
Yeah. I thought about this one. Other than like building my own and watching YouTube videos, the first one I ever saw was when I was I think junior in college, and I started as a co-op at Warjet, the water jet company. And guess what my first CNC machine I got to see? It was a VF-12. And I'm just like, what is... No, you can't. Yeah,
big boy.
Yeah. It's like a school bus next to a VF-2.
Got steps.
And then there was even a GNL that was just like this massive... I mean, they poured a 9-foot concrete pad for it, actually sat down inside the floor. It came from Boeing, and that's it cool. was just a big rolling turd. It was a 5-axis, but they used it just for finishing like cross beams, so like adding holes and facing them and stuff. That was really my first like actual tangible experience. Cost, man. Okay. They got me.
So I'm gonna go backwards a little bit. So I think my intent is really like what's the thing that lit a fire? Would it have been seeing something on YouTube?
I think it was. I like for a while I was always just kind of embarrassed that I kind of learned machining from YouTube and stuff. And well, I learned it trial and error. Ask my wife. Yeah. Like I would break so many tools, and she's like, "You just seem really unhappy." I'm like, "Yeah, I don't know how to make a part." Because after I made that guitar, I got the bug. I was like, "I got to figure out it can." Can you buy a machine? Like I was just trying to figure all this stuff out. And then I found out that there was at the time kind of like a DIY community. I'm like, you can make these on, you know? And so here I am cheap. I think I was a senior in high school at the time and was living with my parents and stuff. And so I went to Goodwill, bought some kids' roller blades, got some funny looks, you know, took the bearings out of it and basically made this like MDF trash CNC machine from one of my mentors at the time. He's like a philanthropist now, but sold his company, and in his barn he's got a couple ATM machines legally. I should probably say that, but he's like, "Oh, here's some stepper motors and here's an Arduino." And I'm just "Oh my goodness." And he actually, he had me making ADA compliant, parts that I'm pretty sure like he just needed to give me, you know, some felt bad, maybe gave me some money, but it was just like these little L square pieces out of white oak. And it was just like a step gauge or something to determine like the height of something. And
that's cool.
Yeah, I think I got the bug by that. And then I built way too many CNC machines after that, just trying to pursue perfection. And that's kind of what we've got going on over here. So,
yeah that's awesome. We're definitely bringing that up later. So first machine you ever ran, I think we talked about that at Warjet. Would that have been the...
No, I wasn't allowed to touch it until long into like my career of being there, not as a co-op. I kept telling them, I was like, "Hey, I'm really interested in machining and manufacturing, and I don't want to just be a design engineer. I like that, but I also want to go do something with my hands and see stuff. To I want to make chips." And they're like, no, you fit in this box." And then the manager, who was, well, he was managing 3 or 4 machinists and then also programming everything. Pretty stressed out dude, just got up and quit after like 15 years. And they're like, "Oh, Ben, hey, you go do this." And they threw me into like MasterCam training and all this stuff. And there's a whole story there. But the first machine I ran was probably my own for a very, very long time. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. I'm writing a couple notes. See if I'm good at circling back to them.
Yeah, lightning round. Let's go.
Lightning. I told you. Maybe I'll come up with a better name than lightning. First project you designed or machine that just snapped, like, this is what I'm doing. Was there something?
It was probably a culmination of realizing I can make anything I want. And my only limitation is how well I built my machine. I think that's why I got the bug to build machines, is because once you have a machine, a computer numerically controlled machine, and you're not just like trying to hand cut everything, well, you can make something better. Yeah. And then from that, you can make something better. And, I've always kind of had an excitement to create something that maybe doesn't exist or something that I think would be fun to like own. So I have like the last couple, just like this wallet that like you press a button and it like raises the cards, but it also like holds them if you like try to, you know, flip it down. And I think like just kind of designing things and realizing that like it's really just the creativity that's your limit. It's, or well, and your understanding of how to machine stuff. I think that's awesome. That's what kind of kept me going. And being fully transparent, it was the lack of hands-on experience that I thought I was going to get as a mechanical engineer. So here's my one caveat, yeah, or my one thing I want to say, PSA or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I have three kids, and I'm like starting to think more and more about like when my son, he's five, but soon he's going to be like, your daughter is like growing up right in front of you. Right. And, I'm thinking about like college, yeah, and like career and all that stuff, which maybe I shouldn't be, but I never want him to feel pressured or feel like he needs to go somewhere to do something, because I feel like I missed out on some stuff because I went to college, because it was so theoretical. It was so the real world stuff that I got was because I decided to do 5 years of engineering and do co-op. And that was like the most eye-opening thing ever. And then also kind of have a hobby on the side that filled that, that bucket. So yeah, it's lightning round, but
I care a lot about this topic.
Yeah.
Fork in the road to kill the lightning round and ramble. I'm going to write down my daughter's name, yeah, Katie.
Yeah. Yeah. Make a note.
An education, because my daughter, a lot of people follow me on Instagram, and I share her story, yeah, a lot, or at least my story with her. She's a couple months away from being 18, and she's her senior year, and she's an amazing student that I never ever was. And I'll share some of those stories in a little bit, probably. Favorite content? What content are you most proud of at Toolpath? So that is, you know, a lot of what you do is create content. From the learn Toolpath in 20 minutes to some cool stuff you've done with customers.
Yeah. So I cheated and I looked at some of your questions before this. So I was thinking.
Perfect.
And I would almost go a step further and say it's not like the content that excites me. Because I feel like I can be pretty creative. Like I've done machining minutes where I've actually been in my shop and I'm like, here's how I machine one of my knives. Like, that's cool. Who can do that for work? I think it's like getting to go to a couple of like customer success videos and seeing that like that aha moment, or we talk, you know, like we talk a lot about like the light bulb aha moments, but like seeing what they saw that I saw maybe 2 years ago, that was maybe harder to see, but like what we're doing actually matters. And it's like changing people's lives is really exciting. I didn't get to see that with water jets, custom water jets. You know, you design them, they're super cool. They do all sorts of cool things, you know, five axis, but you're like, well, you know, what happens after that? Woodpeckers.
Yeah.
Most people can't afford a woodpecker tool. You know, I worked at Woodpeckers for a while. Yeah. So just, I would say not one specific content, but the results of it has been really, really fruitful for me.
I can share that. So I was a part of, I've been a part of some of our customer story videos. I was a part of some of them at when I was on the Fusion team, and it was one of my favorite things that I've ever done. There's something pretty special to me to be in someone's shop, have them show you, like, you always, I've been doing this for 25 years, and just learning, you know, just like, oh, the way he holds his tool, or, you know, it's just all kinds of fun stuff. But to me, it's really satisfying to see someone, you know, we pour our heart and soul into the tools that we make, and it's fun to see that kind of pay off for people. So I totally relate to that. Favorite tool in your shop?
You can't see it, but it's the mini split that I just put in. And Oh, I know, damn. I know it looks like I'm cold, but I'm actually probably sweating, and it's just been such a game changer. And then the next one would probably be CNC or something. I don't know. It'd be tough to have one of those.
Cool. I need a mini split. I'm in Sacramento. You're where are you located?
Yeah, I'm in Ohio. Not too far from Akron, like Medina, Wadsworth area. The shop is about a 45 minute drive for me. So it was another thing too when I became a
the toolpath shop.
Yeah.
As I sit in a shop, the toolpath shop.
Yeah, that is a little confusing because I'll talk about the Silex 7, which is also right behind me. There's one 45 minutes away at the toolpath shop, which you'll have to ask me about how that all worked out. But definitely the mini split. It's amazing. Get one.
Cool. I'm in Sacramento. It gets pretty hot here, and I find myself not going into the garage. I have a Haas in my garage.
As we all do.
As we all should. And it's 100, 105, 106 sometimes with pretty humid. Maybe not like Georgia humid, but still pretty humid. My little weather maker thinks it's thinks it's raining sometimes when it's 110.
That's just the coolant dripping from your ceiling.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Okay. What's the biggest butt kicker you've had when machining parts?
Oh, man. I've had a bunch. As an engineer, like, that mentality is just like, you're going to fail. I love learning from failing. It's why I'm probably kind of bent toward doing more and then learning from it. I know some people are afraid to try something because they think they're going to fail. You probably will.
Yeah.
I've made a lot of mistakes. Biggest mistake, not really a mistake, but I had my vise turned the wrong direction by many instant machinists. So the jaws, they were step jaws. They were holding the part kind of in the direction, it'd be the Y axis, in the direction of the,
so it was turn 90 degrees.
Thanks. And, threw a part through the window. Really made me contemplate life very quickly because it happened so fast. I was like, well, where'd the part go? And then, realized it was 20 feet behind me and missed me within inches. And I had glass on my arm and it's midnight and my wife is sound asleep. And I'm just like, oh, wow. Like, that's one of those freak things. And I don't know if that was just being dumb. Maybe I didn't tighten in the vise, but it was one of those moments where you're like, oh, I need to be on my A game every time I'm doing something because I've got one life or two sets of eyeballs or whatever, So
I said in a meeting with a bunch of executives at Autodesk one time, we make software that drives machines that could kill people. And one of the executives basically said that was hyperbole. And I instinctively wanted to tell him 10 stories that I personally know that are like yours or a couple were worse. So I think we do a good job at Toolpath. This is me patting ourselves on the back and my own self-assessment. So take it for what it is. I think we take that pretty seriously. We understand, that the weight of those things. So can you think of any engineering mistakes you've made? Like ones that
I'm so ready for this. Like, Tim.
We're a good memory. You're ready. Put me in.
Oh, coach. Man. I made the mistake that every young engineer does. I just started my co-op and felt like I knew what I needed to know, And I designed something, took it out to the floor, was really proud of it. The guys on the floor basically laughed at me, told me it wouldn't work. And I said, well, it works in the model. And I never lived it down.
Just the statement was the worst thing.
That was the mistake.
Where were you when I was a machinist?
I was that guy. But here's the thing. Again, going back to the soapbox thing that I've just kind of learned over time is like most engineers, that's just what they're taught. They don't have the sense, the understanding of design for manufacturability. I think every engineer before they graduate has to go make a part that they designed and see what happens, right? So, I've made plenty of engineering and machinist mistakes, but I try not to like think too long and hard about them because they're usually just like learning experiences. which sounds like a silly blanket statement, but I can't think of very many specific. I know there's a bunch.
I'm not prepared to answer that question, but they're just countless. Just, I mean, it's my whole life. It's just, you know, painful lesson on top of just a good learning lesson. I like this one. I think about this fairly often. I'm not a regretful person. I'm a pretty reflectful person. But every once in a while, I think if I was going to go back and talk to 20-year-old Timmy, which you're only, what, 20, 21, something like that?
Not quite.
12, 13? No. So if you were going to go back to 20-year-old Ben or 15-year-old Ben, whatever, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
Yeah, I thought about this one a little bit. It's something that I'm trying to do more. Is just like listen, like really listen to what people have to say. It's so easy, especially in machining. We all have our ways that we love to do stuff. Even you, Tim, I'd be like, yeah, what is this goober talking about? But I've learned so much from just shutting up. And even if I think I'm right, listening to what the other person has to say, because you will find value in it. It's probably a good way to like live life too. Not just when it comes to machining, it really is. It's something that I think have become a lot more familiar, or it's become a lot more apparent since becoming a dad. Cause you like think more about stuff, you know, it's not just me now, you know? I think just listening and, understanding, even if it's not something that you agree with.
I love it. I love it. That last part, understanding, is I think one of the more important things. You know, we can talk about the value, you know, where you should put your WCS or type of work holding you should use or whatever. And I often tell young machinists, like, you know, when you get to a shop, so many of us, like it's younger guys, not younger you, but show up to shop and want to show everybody how awesome we are. And like, just learn why they do things first. You know, at least you know why, and you can decide what to do with that later. Mm-hmm. So a little more fun. One tool, software, piece of gear. Can't use toolpath. Can't use toolpath because that seems too fake. Mm-hmm. I can prophesize toolpath all we want, but one piece of software that you just would really be bummed if it disappeared.
I'd be bummed. It sounds like a plug, but honestly, like I use my utility knife a lot. I'm not a knife guy. I make knives, but I built a utility knife because I wanted to use one and I wasn't really happy with what they
were. Cool one.
And I just use it all the time. And I've got a bunch, so you can't really take them away from me. But you know, hypothetically, I would like.
Not that it's a plug, not that it's a plug, Ben. I now have one as well. You have a side weekend type business. What is the business?
Yeah, so it started kind of out of a love for machining and making things that I wanted to make. And then I was posting a lot of stuff on Instagram. The machinist community, if you guys aren't on Instagram, it's incredible. Like you guys can go DM Tim. He might not respond right away, but he will. Like people in the Instagram community, for some reason, will give you the shirt off their back. Yeah. And I found that with so many other people. And so I try to do the same. But I was building machines, documenting the whole thing. Other people were doing the same thing. And then you kind of just start to find stuff that you like to make. And a knife, especially a folding knife, is one of those like, I can make that. That's easy, right? It's just a few screws, a little pivot. But when you kind of like break it down, there's a lot of machining lessons and manufacturability things that you kind of learn along the way that maybe you wouldn't have with just maybe some billet parts. And because you've got to figure out tolerances, you got to figure out how things kind of work together. And it's a fun thing because you can carry it around. You can use it all the time. It's a fun conversation starter. With all that said, I kind of started Black Fox Machining. Don't even know where it came from. But it was really just a means to kind of help fund this expensive hobby. And boy, has it fluctuated. I mentioned at the beginning, I have three kids. In fact, we'll probably need to wrap up in about an hour because I need to go be with them and my wife needs to go somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's like a fun thing to do and have an outlet, but I've learned that it doesn't need to happen all the time. And I think that's what makes it fun too, right? If I have something, I got something in my head, I can go get it out. I can figure out how to go do that. Yeah. But it's not a job, right? And I think that's what keeps it fun. So I'm very blessed. We moved to a new house about a year ago. And if anybody follows me, this was a nasty pole barn that I've been working super hard on kind of making a little bit more like a shop. And my coolant won't freeze now, right? During the winter, because that was an issue. I built a hot box around it and shoved the heater in there.
Foam box.
All winter long. And I'm like, this cannot happen again. So, that's a little plug, but, I have fun with it and, it keeps me always learning.
Well, I'm actually fairly disappointed. One of the things I had kind of written on my side notes, was I wanted to know more about the name Black Fox. And you said you didn't even know.
Oh man. It's one of the, it's like, I wanted like a cool name that people would remember.
Yeah.
And then everybody started asking me, well, what does it mean? And I was like, I don't know.
I should have made something up first.
I thought it'd been fun to like draw a fox, and it's kind of morphed over the years, but I don't know. They're kind of sly. They're cool creatures. I can't tell you.
I like it. Okay. Let's get into your life story a little bit, Ben. So first of all, time check.
We're good. We're good.
It's 12:30 here. You want to wrap up around 1:30?
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's always interesting to see how people look at your life before, so I think of your life, well, honestly, if I'm just thinking of Ben, we talked about this a little bit before, but whenever I do one of these, I kind of reflect. Like when I think of, I did Kevin Schneider and Justin's recently, and what I wrote down, thinking about you, and then I'm just going to leave that there, and then we'll get into your life story. I wrote, one of the things I appreciate the most about you and kind of think of who you are. I think you're very adaptable. We've changed our team members around to focus on different things a lot in the last, I've been here a year and not a year and a half, but a little under a year and a half. You have been one of the most adaptable people, on the team. I think of Ben as like having a very gentle, happy attitude. Whether it's real or fake, you do a good job making it real or fake. You're clearly super smart. Your family, I think of you as a real strong family person. You have a beautiful family. You're clearly devoted to them. I think of you as a person of faith. Maybe some of that stuff will come up as we're talking about your life and your career. Cool. So this is a show mostly about machining. So let's start with your childhood. So let's say, like, where did you grow up? We don't need to, get too detailed. Where did you grow up? But how did like making things, like somewhere in your life, it's the way I look at the world, you felt like you could make stuff somewhere in your life. We talked about that a little bit before, but did you grow up with your parents building stuff and fixing things? Or let's talk a little bit about your childhood when it comes to that kind of stuff.
So no, my parents, my dad didn't have a ton of tools. He viewed tools and still does, and that's totally fine, as like a hammer is used specifically for a hammer. It's not used as a bracket to hold, a weed whacker engine on your bike. Don't ask me how I know. I think before I started making things, I started pulling things apart, right? I started destroying things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like a really common thread with like a lot of engineers and even machinists, because we're always just really curious about things, right? I would get these really cool Air Hog RC airplanes or whatever for my birthday. And now I can see how frustrating it would be if my son tore it all apart and was like, look, Dad, batteries. But I would just like rip them apart and pull the motor out of it and just kind of figure out, what can I do with this? And the curiosity never faded. The destruction got bigger. I remember my Well, I was homeschooled up until like fourth grade, and so were all the other people on the cul-de-sac. My parents live out on in the country, like 3 acres, but there's a cul-de-sac, and so everybody is just, we were like done by lunchtime, and my mom literally be like, I don't want to see you until like dinner. And
I'm like, kids,
we got it, cool. And I was actually just telling my buddy about this. We took my friend's dad's bike apart because we thought it'd be so cool, you know, and it became way more complicated after we took it apart to try to figure out how to put it together. Cause I think we were trying to put a weed whacker engine on it, but yeah, just like making hovercrafts and, paintball guns and, rockets and like, just, I don't know. I'm looking back at it and I'm like, I had a pretty sweet childhood, you know? But that's no, awesome. Yeah, my dad and mom never were like, they never like made things. And, I think probably some of that rubbed off on me from my grandpa. I didn't know him too long. I think he passed away when I was about 10, but we built like a go-kart together. And I was just like, this is the cool, like we're building like something that goes, you know? I still have that go-kart today. I need to get it fixed up for Chance, but
that's great.
Yeah,
that's
just great. Always pulling things apart and learning, never stop.
Okay. So what things that kind of come out to me with that is you were always tinkering, breaking, fixing, maybe more breaking than fixing. Would you say your parents, whether you saw it, like I grew up, my dad and uncles were just inventing and making stuff around the, you know, farm basically. But would you say your parents were like, didn't punish you for pulling things apart much or scold you for, they would kind of let your creativity.
They would know, they would to a certain degree. Like if I'm taking the, our only leaf blower and turning it into a hovercraft and then not putting it back. And it's like covered in tape and goop and all of this stuff. You know, there was some talks.
Awesome.
I never felt stifled by them. And actually they were the ones that kind of encouraged me to pursue engineering as many other people did when you see somebody who's excited about how the world works. And so they did kind of help foster that in some ways, but not having really any background. I remember overtaking my parents' garage. It was a 2-car garage. I took basically the whole bay to try to build a CNC machine. When I was, a senior in high school, and I'm like, well, now I need a workspace. And then we ripped the deck apart, so I built a workbench from the, I still have that thing, and it's like this heavy outdoor wood, like, you know, 4x4 table. And yeah, I just remember them being like, hey, you need to find your own place here soon because dad can't park it all. It's becoming an issue.
I love my daughter, but the day she thinks she's doing anything serious in the garage, it's going to be a problem. Okay, so I'll dovetail into that one more follow-up is what would you like to kind of replicate with your kids from your childhood? You know, there's some people like I never want to do this. Like, I try not to think about life in a negative lens. Like, what would you like to replicate or make sure they kind of experience something similar?
Yeah, I think like we all screw up our kids, even when we're trying not to screw them up. So, I think I want all my kids, and I've even seen it with my oldest. He'll come out here. I built a slide. Which that's not me trying to get bonus points. That's because I always thought it'd be cool to have a slide.
It's me trying to murder my children.
Well, actually, So I almost did murder my children because I was like, oh, I'll just make it the same angle as the stairs. That's pretty easy to go up and down. Oh, my goodness. Actually, Bree, I have a video of it. My wife went down and she just about
hit terminal velocity.
So, but yeah, I guess I want them to take away that, I guess a little bit different than how I grew up is here's the tools that are available to you. I also want you to have an understanding that everything has come from something too. Like this, this water bottle, like be curious, like how was this made? Like you have to I feel like so many people go through life and they know nothing about anything. And it's like, I don't know if it's wrong, but it feels like it's like, well, you just bought that on Amazon and there's a bunch of, features on it that like are, you know, need to be deburred. And it's just like, you know, that's probably just like engineer machinist thing, but
yeah, they might not appreciate that today, but maybe someday.
But I guess I want my kids, coming back to that, to feel like they can approach anything, even like the machine. My son knows how to like turn it on if I'm around. He knows he has his glasses mm-hmm. in a certain spot, and like to expose them to what I'm doing, but being careful not to portray that this is what you have to do. Because you and I both know that like when you're doing a job that you're passionate about, it doesn't, I mean, sometimes it feels like work, but I would never want to be like, hey, this is what you should do, kind of scenario. So I don't know, I'm still thinking about it, but that's a good question.
Okay. I love my sharing some unsolicited advice as a parent. I feel like our kids are little science experiments. I'm getting towards the end of the real experiment. I feel like they're about a 25-year science experiment. You have a hypothesis, you do your thing. And then I feel around 25 or 30 is where like you can start seeing the real mm-hmm. results, right? So my real unsolicited advice is always to parents is like expose them to lots mm-hmm. of things, and they really have to find. And I'll talk about my daughter here in a second. I believe to be awesome, which should be all of our goals, to be awesome at life and what we do. You really have to find the thing that fuels you, right? I mean, Al, our CEO, he's found this book, The Six Working Geniuses. I struggle to kind of follow like real closely a lot of those types of books. But the real takeaway for me was that we all have things that energize us, right? Like when I make things, I'm just fueled and energized. When you know, there's different things that energize me. This book would call working geniuses, right? Something that you do and it energizes you. Working competency, I think, was the middle one where, yeah, I'm good at it. Maybe I'm competent at it. Doesn't really kill me or feed me. And then working frustrations or the things that just suck the life out of you, right? A lot of people think those are the things that you're not good at. Well, unfortunately, sometimes you're actually really good at the working frustrations. They just suck the soul out of you, right? And so that's what I've tried to share with my daughter. You brought up, we're talking about education and all that. Like, you brought up your education. My daughter's a over 4.0 student, taking AP classes, all advanced dork super nerd calculus stuff, and she doesn't know what she wants to do. She doesn't know what she wants to do after high school. And I have some friends that are like sound disappointed that I'm not pushing her to go to some university. She's going to go to community college and she's going to maybe start a business, try to figure life out before she really commits to a real education path.
Love that. So,
I'm actually super excited for her. She seems pretty content with it. I've exposed her to lots and lots of things. I've introduced her to people that, you know, work as professionals. She's a numbers dork. So I like to think she's going to do some business finance or something like that, but we'll see. Okay. So childhood, it sounds kind of awesome to me. We talked a little bit about how you started at Ward Jet, but let's look at this part of your life with briefly, what did you do there? I think we kind of covered that, but, any key lessons that kind of stuck with you?
There are, I do want to get out real quick before Ward Jet. There was, I was working at a church. It was actually, I figured we should back it up just a hair more. because maybe this plays into the adaptability thing. I'll blow your mind real quick. I actually, my dad was
not that hard.
Here we go. So my dad was a director of development at a community college, the like the sister college of University of Akron, which is a bigger campus. And so he got tuition remission and stuff. And I went to community college. It was great. I did not go as an engineer. I was like terrified. I was like, nope, I'm going into, what did I go into? Business. And man, I forgot that I had some online classes until about midterms. And microeconomics, I get like an email saying like there's midterms. I'm like, oh, I got to get out of this. This is going to get on my GPA record. I think it might have been the day or something. I was able to not have it be on my permanent record. But so originally, actually, I was a worship leader intern at our church. And the church was like probably about 2,000 in the congregation. So about 150. Sometimes maybe closer to 200 would be like the high school and the youth. So I got to, it was fun, man. I got to lead this this team of high schoolers. You know, they were stuck in sports, so you never know who you're going to get during practices and stuff. But that was kind of the fun of it. And I learned that, it was a really big time in my life where I was learning to kind of lead people that are in completely different areas of life, like high school. It's really hard to lead high schoolers. And I got to make music. I was making not a ton of money, but I got to make a little bit of money with that while I was doing my college classes. And it just became that I found that actually I do want to do engineering. I got stuck kind of, you know, I did a semester where I was doing business and then I'm like, I'm going to do engineering. And they're like, yeah, sure you are. And you're like, you're going to be playing catch up for the next 7 years of your life. And they weren't wrong. I took summer classes and stuff, but I really found I think it's just the creativity. Anytime I can have a little bit of creativity, which it's funny because most engineers are kind of like, give me a book. I don't want to look at you, you know, let me look at your feet kind of thing. Yeah. So I've never fit in that mold, but getting to like make songs and record things and do all sorts of fun stuff with the high school is super fun. And it's where I met my wife. So she was serving at the time. And, but then engineering got a little bit more challenging. I, started doing co-op, and before I go to Warjet, got to say this on the record, it was like 3 months before we graduated. And I had already had 3 co-op rotations under my belt. And luckily for me, my co-op was very hands-on. It was a custom water jet company called WordJet. They're in Talmadge, Ohio. They're still there. And because it was so custom, the engineers that designed the stuff would like have to go out and build it. And man, was that like the best and worst experience, because you're like, I'm the worst engineer ever. I can't make this. And you just get so humbled so quickly. But I came back from those co-op experiences. I was about to graduate. I was building a CNC lathe at the time and then made an automatic tool changing turret for my senior project. And because I already had the CNC lathe, I was like, oh, this would be fun. And I asked my buddy, who was also graduating in 3 months, to go like tap an M6 hole. Like, just like, hey, go, you know, go do this. And he's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? And I was like, all right. So the system is broken, because here it is. You're a 5-year engineering program. You don't know how to tap an M6 hole. And it just immediately made me realize this is why we have what we have. When young engineers go out to go design stuff, they don't know anything except all the book smart stuff. And then you've got machinists of, you know, 10, 15 years, like, you don't know anything. And so,
there's a tension there that sucks, to be honest.
But man, it was a fruitful time. I learned so much. All the other engineers that I worked with were building CNC machines at the time. So we were all just building, we were seeing who could make the best like machine. And then our boss or head of engineering got wind of that And he's like, well, let's use this to our advantage. We'll give you guys all $5,000 each. And you guys design a 2-foot by 4-foot water jet that can fit through a door and do all this stuff, run a ball bar. No way. It's got to cut the part. And you get to keep all the money that you have left over. And then you get to keep the machine. And I was like, I've built a machine for $800. Did you say $5,000? And I was, at the time I was in school, I was doing summer classes, and I was like, I got to get on this. I know I'm an intern. Can I be a part of this? And they're like, yeah, if you can fit in with school. And so there would be super late nights. And then I would, you know, take a change of clothes, go to class, and then go, you know, build a machine and I had to design it.
That's awesome.
So I designed it to be a CNC router, but no table. And then I bought the cheapest horse water trough and put like a 1-inch thick plate of steel in there, covered it up with trash bags just to run the part.
Buffer it.
it ended up working. It's actually back there. It's got its own bellows way back
there. Oh, you still have it.
It's 500 pound. I mean, the
Why have I not seen pictures of this on Instagram?
Oh, I run it occasionally. It's usually like Etsy stuff that Bree finds on Etsy.
That's a requirement today is to post pictures of that on Instagram. That's so awesome.
Very fun time.
What are you doing for like an intensifier pump? And
they
all
supplied
that.
We did have to design our own. Abrasive dispensing unit, which is harder than you think. Wow. So that was,
I kind of hate water jet machines because I've dealt with them in the production environments, and I understand why people love them, but, I was a part of, during the Iraq war when they're up armoring a lot of things, water jets were selling like hotcakes and, clogged, you know, garnet. They're not maintenance free. I'll say that. Okay, so that's pretty awesome. Any key lessons from the war jet time?
So, I think what I took away was, what I didn't explain. I mentioned a little bit at the beginning was when that guy left in machining, I became a design engineer and like a part-time machinist programmer. And this was like a really valuable time for me to kind of learn other people as well. I had only really interacted with people in college and then also at church and stuff. And I had these machinists, they've been machinists for 15, 20 years, pretty crusty by the book. Mm-hmm. And just a little bit of background kind of blows my mind still. They never knew what size the stock was going to be. They just didn't know. So they ran, whether it was aluminum or steel, they ran 1¼-inch Sumitomo, like 4-inch stick out shell mill at like 40 inches a minute or something very like low. And then, you know, 60 thou depth of cut and just, you know, and I was like looking at that and I'm like, well, I do high speed machining on my machine and it's like, you know, it's just a tiny little thing. It's a homemade, you know, jobber. And I was like, I wonder if we could do that. And long story short, we ended up getting a 3/4-inch, like pretty long end mill because we were making a C-axis billet housing for the 5-axis water jet. So it's just this big piece of billet. It was like a 2.5-hour cycle time. And that's not a joke. We got it down to 12 minutes. Mm. But before that, I was told by one of those machinists that you can't run the VF2 that fast at like 200 inches a minute. Yeah. And, you know, I was like, well, the VF2. It's got the SS on it. And,
not the VF12. You can't run the VF2 that fast.
But I think this was this was a time where I had a lot of pushback. I was young. There's, you know, it was kind of young versus old, but I was like, you know what? Yeah. I've known these guys for like 4 years and I built up a lot of rapport. Maybe not with one of them, cause he actually ended up leaving because, I think he had to switch out parts more often than he wanted to, but for the ones that I did kind of build rapport with, I realized listening, hearing them out, and like leading by example too. Because I think some of them were afraid to run the machine at 200 inches a minute. And I said, yeah, I get it. Yeah. It's scary, but let me show you. And that was like a big moment for me professionally and personally, where it's like, I didn't just impose what I thought was right at the time. It was more of a, hey, what do you think? Like, maybe we can work on this together, and kind of slowly iterated. And yeah, anyway, it was cool. A lot of really good learning
That's
lessons.
That's a good story. Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah. Just the human interaction and dynamic, so important in the machine shop. Now, like, I started when I was young, very young, 20s, and you know, I'm in my late 40s, and but the industry covers a huge swath of people now, and the real crusty guys when I started, those guys are either no longer with us or have retired. But it's been fun for me in the last probably 10 years. The industry has changed a lot. For the good, as far as knowledge sharing and stuff like that. Give me a rough year on like that, the 200 inch a minute kind of time.
Oh, that was right before Woodpeckers, which would have been 2021 maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay. So late teens, early 20s. Okay. So what the reason I ask is, I started using what Fusion would call adaptive machining. I'm kind of making it up. Let's just say late, 2008, right in that kind of window, maybe 2009, 10, when it was in Mastercam. They used to have, like, HSM originally built that adaptive toolpath in Mastercam. And I went through similar thing, Ben. I was like, no, guys, like, it was change our lives kind of stuff. I was taking 45-minute, stainless steel jobs, turning them into just several minutes, from 45 minutes of roughing to, 8 minutes of roughing, 10 minutes of roughing. And people are just with longer tool life and all that. So it's fun for me to, I have these kind of bookmarks through my time, where when I was working at Autodesk, I would go into a shop and be like, oh, let me change your life. Please just let me change your life. And it's been fun. It's been a fun journey for me. So it's fun to hear that. Fun to hear that from you. Let's move on to Woodpecker. We don't need to get too in depth, but generally what did you do there? And, some of the more important life lessons, maybe trade lessons too.
Yeah. I actually had a previous boss, was a previous peer at the water jet company, leave to go to Woodpecker's Tools. And just a little bit of background there. They make like very high end, expensive woodworking hand tools, pretty premium, bright red aluminum. And they really have a name to withhold. They're probably the best of the best, right? We were throwing stuff out that if it was out 2,000 over, 12 inches for a square, then it was thrown in, the scrap pile. So I was like very well aware. I didn't even know that it was, not too far from where I was currently working in Strongsville. And I was like, man, that'd be a dream job. And at the time, that was probably about 2 years before. So he hadn't been with the water jet company for about 2 years. And then I was reporting to a manufacturing engineer, like the shop floor manager and my manager for engineering. And they weren't talking to each other. And I was working way too much and making no money and saving the business like $80,000 for, a part. And so I was feeling pretty worn thin and kind of a little bit like taken advantage of. And so it was just kind of this right timing. And I was starting to look around at other options. And Nate, the guy that left a couple of years prior, was like, hey, you want to come work at Woodpeckers? And I was like, this is amazing. And so I did a quick sit down with the president, Rich. And I mean, it was the coolest job. So a little bit about it. You're a design engineer, but you own everything. And so that means you own packaging, you own quality, you own production, you own assembly, you own everything. You have your own, at the time we kind of had our own R&D department where we had our own like VF2 machines. And like, if you couldn't machine the part, it was not making it to production. If you can, and so it was like such a really cool business model. But it was also a challenge too, because it's pretty demanding and stuff like that. I learned very quickly time management. I had a lot of projects and products that I was juggling. One was in QA. The other one was in another building where they're having an issue with some tolerance or something on assembly, or we didn't have this DeStaco clamp, so we couldn't do this on a fixture. I mean, just, it was crazy. It was a lot. But I did learn a lot from it and really enjoyed my time there. And it's what allowed me to kind of help fund or feel secure in buying a 5,000 pound Chinese mill, sight unseen, and all from savings, you know? So there's that story too.
So that's pretty awesome. That's let's talk about the, how do you say the brand?
Style?
I think style. The machine behind you.
I don't know. I'll have to ask the CEO who reached out to me after I almost got a hole put in my my belly.
Yeah, do ask. Because I'm a machinist, so English wasn't my best. I don't know if English is the right. So I would pronounce it like S-I-L-E, right? Something like that. So how long have you had that? When did you get it? And let's just start with when did you get it?
I think 2023. I've had it for almost 2 years. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of when I first started hearing about them. Yeah, it was probably early COVID-ish. Kevin Allinson, my buddy up in Minnesota, he's the first person that brought him to my attention. And since then, I know several people, Kevin Schneider, Allinson, a bunch of different people have them. They seem like pretty neat little machines. And is it worked out pretty good for you?
Yeah, it's been excellent. I mean, it's not a commercial for style, but for what I've needed it for, and also coming from building machine background, knowing that at the time when I got mine, there wasn't like any support for them. Before I think Titan started selling them, there was just really, nobody really knew much about them. And had been wanting one for several years, saving up, kind of making knives and things on my homemade machines and being able to kind of buy this, but it's been great. Runs off single phase. I really appreciate it.
That's great. I'm stoked for you. I think, I mean, I jokingly say everybody should have a TIG welder and a CNC mill in their garage. I'm kind of serious. It's been pretty fun for me to have a machine in my garage, and you know, I spend a lot of money on tools, so it's fun to have. All right, so at Woodpecker, important lesson. Give me one good lesson that you feel you've carried through from there.
This was right after kind of feeling burnout from the water jet company, kind of doing two jobs at once. Woodpeckers was a demanding job, but what I took away from the WordJet experience was the whole listening thing. So when I came to Woodpeckers, I was a new kid on the block, pretty intimidating. There's like 50 Haas machines. Actually, Adam Morley was there when I was there, and like we crossed paths but didn't know each other. It's just crazy.
Cool. Small world.
And like getting to just kind of listen to the machinists that have been there a long time. Because I knew I was going to be interacting with them even more so, because they're the R&D ones that kind of help push the parts through, and getting to learn more about their history, their story. There's a guy from Romania. We called him Russian George. Don't ask me why, but just really sweet friendships that you kind of build. And that was actually the hardest thing leaving the company was, I think because I kind of took it a bit more seriously, like these are actual people that have actual stories, and, you know, we're all making, you know, fun toys for rich people, but it's like, we all take like a lot of value in what we do. and a lot of pride. Cool. So, yeah.
That's cool. That's great. Now it's time to tell our favorite part of your career story. How did you, how did you find yourself at Toolpath?
Yeah, it's a funny story. Every job that I've had, I've never applied for. And the same is true for Toolpath. I mentioned it was supposed to be a foreshadow. I threw a part through the window of the aisle. They are not safety rated, or at least they weren't at that time. And I posted it in the Facebook group because at the time that was, you know, the only place you could really talk about it. And the CEO reached out and said they were going to make it right or whatever. But Justin was lurking in there and I didn't know. And a little bit about Justin, he's definitely upped his social game because at the time, no friends, no picture, no nothing. And so you have this random like Justin Gray contact.
Random dude in the shadows.
Literally. No picture? Who does that? Psychopath?
No, he's got Google. You know, he's got Meta glasses. And
I know. He's really, really come a long way. Good job, Justin.
That's awesome.
This rando reached out to me. And at first, we were just talking about the machine because at that time, it was just like not very common to have one. And he must have known.
I'm sorry to stop you. Did he have one?
I believe so, because he was on the page. Yeah. Okay. And this all happened pretty soon after. And so we're messaging, and I guess he must have known that I was in Ohio, but I didn't know that he was. And he said something about Cleveland. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not too far from there. And that's cool. I don't know anybody in Ohio that has one of these machines. And he's like, well, we should go out for lunch sometime. And I'm like, what? And I made the mistake of telling him I worked at Woodpeckers, and he's like, hey, I'm in Strongsville. You know, we should like go get lunch right now. And I'm like, so I called my wife. I said, hey, going to go meet up with a stranger, which isn't out of the ordinary for me. I've met, I did a search on Craigslist, for CNC stuff when I moved to, a new place a couple of years ago. And reached out to this guy that was selling CNC stuff. And I said, hey, not interested in what you're selling, but it seems like you're into this. You want to like meet up? And he's become one of my best machinist friends that's actually given me a ton of jobs on both machines, has helped me pay stuff
so
up.
Awesome.
And then he's given me a key to his shop. I mean, like, guys, just put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Nine times out of 10, you'll be okay.
It was very much not my natural nature. A lot of people think I'm a very, I'm a very shy person by nature. So I overcome that.
It was outward.
So that's a good lesson.
Be careful,
right?
Be
careful. But there's a lot of freaking awesome people.
It's cool.
There.
So
you had a date with Justin.
Met him at Chipotle, and you have to remember, I had no idea what this was about. I thought he was just saying thanks for saving his life. Because he was putting safety glass in his machine, and I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. And then he's telling me about this thing that he's working on, and he says he works at, you know, NASA, and I'm like, oh, this guy, you know, like, I thought he was just giving me some like garbage. And then I'm still listening, and he's talking about Toolpath, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds, what is he saying here? Maybe I should listen. And then he kind of just pauses.
Wishful.
He pauses, and he's like, so what do you think about it? And I'm like, you know, it sounds, you know, complicated. I don't know. And he's like, well, I want you to come. He's like, will you come work here? And I said, what? Wait, what? Wow. And it was like one of these weird interactions where it went from like, who are you to, okay, what's going on? And then we started talking a little bit more. And I called my wife and after the interaction, and I was like, hey, this is super weird, but I think I'm going to pursue this. He said that next week, the entire team is going to be in, and I'll get to meet him, including Andy. And I was like, I'll be able to determine if this is really a gimmick or, because I was like, I don't know, should I just keep going? He was saying some wild stuff, like we're going to change the industry and all that. I'm like, okay, yeah, you go do that, buddy.
Yeah.
And he gave me an address. I love telling this story. I actually just told it on Justin and Andy's little recap thing. And I'll never forget it. It was his home address. I walk up this driveway to his house, and I, like, out of the corner of my eye, in the garage, I see all of these software engineers standing around one of these machines sweating because they took some Xometry job that they never should have taken. And they were trying to, before you joined, Tim, we were trying to post G-code from Toolpath.
Yeah, and it was insane.
But you know what? It was that aha moment for me. I was like, oh, this is real. And these guys are invested. They're a little in over their heads. And I think they all knew that. But they're showing me this stuff. And it went from, this is a gimmick. This is like, you know, get out of my hair, to how can I be a part of this? This is the, like, it was just like a 180. And then we went out to dinner. I got to know Andy. My wife came, and like, I think the next day we decided, I'm like, I gotta do this. I gotta join. And so just a really cool story, and kind of the rest is history, but it was risky, you know, two kids at the time. Yeah. Bree was pregnant with our third. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was. Yeah. Crazy. So, yeah.
Man, I appreciate the trying to clean it up, Ben. I appreciate the balls that it takes to do that. I didn't clean it up. That's sorry, but yeah. I mean, I think of, there's so many directions to go with that. But that's impressive. It's a fun story.
Love telling it.
So let me poke at the Toolpath gig for a bit. So, first of all, we have about 20 minutes. Right. I think this is a good timing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody should follow Ben. What's your Instagram? Let's start there.
It's at Black Fox Machining. I have a personal one, but don't use it. You do have to type it.
Follow Ben there.
There's a caveat. You do have to type it all the way out because I make utility knives and they are dangerous and I'm blacklisted. So type it all the way out.
I forgot. I had a heck of a time finding. No, I found you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what you do. You go to Toolpath's Instagram.
There you go, yeah.
Go to people Toolpath is following, and then that's how I find a lot.
We'll tag it. We'll tag it in. You know, if this is a short or something.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. So you were. We talked about it a little bit already. I'm trying not to rehash too much. So you're making Xometry parts. I mean, hats off to everybody making Xometry parts and similar type of work. That is real work. It's stressful. The margins aren't great. So I think both of us have a lot of empathy for those people. Yeah. You know, I try to make these not about Toolpath, but that is, I believe we are making those people's lives, you know, a lot better. And then week by week, maybe every 2 weeks, because that's how our development sprints work. Hopefully every 2 weeks, we're making your lives a little bit better, but you were doing that and living the hustle. Yeah. How did you feel? We're going to talk about feelings now.
I'm ready.
How did you feel when you were having those conversations with Al? We already talked about it, but he was talking about basically your role changing.
Yeah. So I think I've learned over the past 10, 11 years, the more you're willing to kind of risk and not even risk, I would say willing to accept change, because change is like inevitable, right? The more you're willing to accept it and kind of embrace it, the better off you'll be. And I think it's a good way to live, is like, we're all going to go through hard stuff. You know, my son was stuck in the NICU for 31 days. After he was born, he almost died in my arms. And he was the very first, you know, he was our first kid, our oldest. And, it really shakes you up, and it makes you think about how life is short, and not to get so, you know, philosophical and stuff, but it's real. And it's like, what do you have to lose with, like, you know, even something with Toolpath, like if it all went sour, and it, I guess it still could, but you know, I choose to believe that we're going to change the industry, and we are, but what do we have to lose? I mean, we've got an incredible story already to tell. I've met literally the coolest people in the world, including you, Tim. Like, I don't know if people know, but Tim used to be my boss for a good while. And that was like super refreshing for me. And I don't know. I think just kind of saying yes, understanding the risk that comes with it. I don't know. I didn't really have a whole lot of hesitation when Al was talking to me. I kind of was already all in at that point.
Yeah. And then by the time I came around, so I think I followed Al by a month or so, something like that. And I started as your direct manager. And I think I can think of a few times where it's like, hey, Ben, we're pivoting. Hey, Ben, we're pivoting. Hey, Ben, we're pivoting. And I've just always very much appreciated your, okay, we're all a team. Let's do this. So on that theme, like we joke, like we're building the plane as we're taking off, right? Toolpath in the year and whatever that I've been here, it's amazingly, you know, very impressively moved forward. And I've seen, I was a part of HSM and Fusion as that took kind of an amazing, you know, development path. Maybe I'm patting ourselves on the back a little too much because we still have a long way to go. But now you're doing content work. A lot of people, if they're signing up for trials, and you're helping them with adoption. Mm-hmm. So I very much appreciate your willingness to basically, I always say, clean the toilet if you have to, right? Not that helping people adopt Toolpath is cleaning the toilet, but let's spend a second. Are there any memories that you can think of in your time at Toolpath? So we covered the demoing to the Autodesk team, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, you know, in 5 or 10 years, we're you know, helping millions of shops be way more productive. There's several times that I've been at Toolpath and I've thought, like, this is a moment. Right. We still have tons of work to do, but like, this is a moment that I'm going to remember, you know, 10 years from now, I'm going to be like, I remember standing there looking Ben in the eye when he's in the back of the sketchy Uber. We'll leave that one out, but we don't have to edit that out, but I don't want to tell the story because it felt irresponsible. I think about several times where I was like, this is a moment. Do you have any you want to share?
Defining moments. I think having everybody, just about everybody, because I think Abdullah was having a baby at the time, but we had our entire team right before you broke your neck, did your little fall there, Tim. Yeah. We had everybody at the shop, and it felt like up until the point that, you know, we were a team, but we were all, we're all remote, right? And we're working with each other. And sometimes we're like, I don't know how to talk to this guy. Or should I, you know, interrupt with a Zoom call or, you know. But, man, that was such a formative time for our team. And I took so much away from that. But it felt like a defining moment for, like, Toolpath. Because we were all refocused on what the mission was. We got to hear everybody's like story, even personally. I kind of understand who is who, what, you know, what's your background. So I think about that, and I think about how that's actually been one of the most important things that I think at Toolpath that I've valued is culture. It's really easy to talk about culture, but it's really hard to maintain it. And I've not worked at a bunch of places, but in my short time of working, it's like, it's what keeps people going, you know? It's why we're talking right now. It's relationships are truly the most important thing in life. And the fact that we get to build relationships professionally selling a product is, I think, just, you know, it's just a means to that. One thing that maybe Tim hasn't said on the call is, like, I'm actually transitioning now more adaptability toward like customer success role. I'm still doing some content, of course, and we won't lose sight of that. But I've been in several, a lot of onboarding calls, and I've gotten to hear stories and just listen, right? Just, I'm talking a lot on this podcast, but listening is our biggest strength. And it's been so fun to like listen to somebody and they're like, oh yeah, I'm trying to use Toolpath and I do this and Xometry and all these little things go off in my head. Cause I'm like, I know exactly what that guy is feeling. Cause I did it, you know, 2 years ago. I just did it real poorly or whatever. And yeah, I think that's, I forget what the question was, but I've really appreciated that side of Toolpath where we're selling a product, but I think we're creating a community and something more special too.
Yeah, that's great to hear. So the question, and I think you did a good job answering it. The question was, in 10 years from now, what are like some key kind of moments you'll remember?
Oh, IMTS.
I think our IMTS is a IMTS, big one for me. I think we're more alike than maybe I would have guessed. And not that I don't think we're alike, but because our meeting right before I had my big accident. That's one, you know, I can think of, like, not to get all romanticize it, but like I can think of, you know, we're playing whirly ball like, just for the record, our teams were you know, the team you and I are on, we're dominating. But I remember like looking across, like making eye contact with you, like, you know, the same thing with Adam, you know, just like those things, like there's a connection that you build when you're face to face. And that's why I love getting out in front of customers and building those same connections. You know, Faye beat my best score in basketball. You know, those things might seem trivial and silly, but I never send him a Slack message without a basketball emoji.
I love it. I love it.
Just for the record, I whooped everybody's butt in basketball, and then Faye dropped my, drops my score. It took me probably $80 of nickels to beat his score after that. Yeah, those things are meaningful times, right? And then for me, so anybody that doesn't know, I haven't really, it's not even super official, but I used to manage the team that basically did everything customer facing. And a very meaningful time to me is I broke my neck and back in April. I was in the, ICU for a long time. And I remember feeling like, this team's going to handle business. And since then, I've been kind of in the shadows, kind of, working probably more hours, to be honest. But I have to go lay down from pretty often. So I do a lot of weird hours, and the whole company is kind of, rallied around me and helped support that. So that stuff's super, super important to me. And those are things that I'll remember for the rest of my life. Cool. So, I think we want to kind of head towards wrapping up, and I like to kind of transition to a section. I used to race dirt bikes. I won't ever again, unfortunately. I'll probably never race anything again, but that's fine. Since I raced mountain bikes, I used to take notes, and I would write at the end of kind of my debrief, kind of post-mortem race. I would always write focus forward, so I could focus on whatever I wanted to think about, moving forward. Right. So I like to kind of wrap up the towards the end of my episodes of this podcast is like, let's focus forward a little bit. So whatever your title is, a Toolpath, and what you actually do, where do you see our biggest opportunities for, I'll drop a few things on you at once, and I can remind you, as we chunk through it again. But I think of you as one of our storytellers in machining, right? So where do you think we have an opportunity to do more and better and grow kind of how we tell stories, adoption kind of in machining and in Toolpath, and then in product? So we have kind of like the storytelling, adoption, how do we help people with adoption, and then also the product. Can you want to drop any of those on me? And full disclosure for everybody, I try not to just drop blind stuff on people, but right before this I was changing this kind of prep notes like crazy, so some of these are kind of blind, so no real pressure, but share a little bit.
Where do I see the biggest opportunities?
Yeah, we're like, what do you hope that we start doing differently or more of, or opportunities to change the industry is what I really care
about. Yeah, interesting. I have enjoyed from the content side of things to kind of like figure out what the heck that meant, right? At first they're like, oh, you're the content guy now. And I'm like, okay, well, what's my, define my role. And they're like, you know, whatever content guy does, right? And, but that's been really cool because I've had a lot of, I've been able to experiment with a lot of things. But I've also noticed that I've really enjoyed like getting to know again, like the community, and the most like fruitful conversations happen through like the DMs on Toolpath, or somebody is trying to figure out how to do something. And yeah, I don't know exactly how to answer the question, but I would say, I love being able to tell other people's stories with something that we are doing to help them. Yeah. So
that's aligned with what we're doing, Ben. That's great. So more of that, more
adoption and machining. So that's happening right now as we speak. Matt, me, and Paul, we are your guys, right? So we think of Toolpath as you have the software, the product, but you also have the people. And so when you become a subscriber, or even if you're not, like, we're here. Like, we want to be a part of the community. We want to make sure that you're successful. And if that's one thing people take away from just Toolpath in a general sense, is like, we want to be as genuine as possible and elevate you. And I think we are doing that.
I concur. When I joined Toolpath, my job was to basically start the team that you're on. And I remember Al came to me because he already kind of knew how I thought about a lot of that stuff. And I was like, the best way you can help a machine shop, you know, young, especially young machine shop, you know, whatever the deal is, just help them however you can help them. And that's how you get the long lasting relationships. And then they become your biggest champion. Yeah. So if we focus on making people more awesome, they make us more awesome. So that's good to hear. I'll sharpen up the last part of that question about the product. Okay. What is there something you either know is kind of coming in the fairly new roadmap, something that's not even on our roadmap that you think would specifically be like a huge help for customers that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I would say I've been on several calls and I know what other people want, but I haven't thought about what I want, which is kind of interesting. I think it aligns properly with what other people want. 3+2 machining. Mm-hmm. It's funny how quick the industry has adopted 5-axis, because I felt like that was such a new thing, like even 10, maybe even less than that years ago. And that is just like, it's not the rage. It's whatever everybody has moved to. And I think we have to be able to accommodate a lot of different workflows from that standpoint. I know that we have, you know, development of 5-axis right now happening, and that's super exciting. But getting to see how that's actually going to change people's way that they like work and think about things is super exciting. Like, I think we're doing a very good job when it comes to 3-axis. And I had some really cool interactions this past week. I won't throw his name out there, but somebody, a non-Toolpath subscriber, started just having a conversation with me, and they're like, oh, well, why don't you do this with the 5-axis or whatever? What, you know?
I don't think Mark is going to care that we're throwing his name out. We'll leave it at Mark.
He just like went off in his own little world and talked to ChatGPT for several hours or something. And he came back to me and he's like, oh, here now. Now when you, you take your Toolpath operations and drop them into Fusion, now you can tell it that you're either using a 4th or 5th axis, and it just, we already know the setup directions. So just populate those into the tool orientation and then culminate them. And I'm like, you did that. He's like, here's the script. Have fun with it. And I was like, I'll get you connected with Justin. And so seeing like people like that aren't even Toolpath subscribers, which I think you will be tomorrow probably, but it just like pick up and run with it because we've created a tool and like people are building on top of it. That's so cool. Like, that's what gets me.
Yeah. Maybe people don't want to hear me ramble, but what I'm going to share with you, people can listen or not, but, I've told Al several times, I probably shared it with other Toolpathers. Like I think about watching Fusion grow while I was part of Fusion. And I've said like Toolpath will hit our stride of growth when like buddies are telling buddies like, dude, you'd be stupid to not start using Toolpath. And then when I always have two things, maybe three, but the second one is like when people start doing like super geek stuff and making their own scripts to make it better. And this week, so my Instagram machinist NorCal buddy Sean, he started, I think he's subscribed and he's digging into Fusion. I mean, not Fusion, but Toolpath. I think you and Paul and Matt have all been, helping him out. I follow Mark on Instagram because Mark and I are both motorheads and dorks, and, he makes some amazing, four-stroke, go-kart engines. I used to be in the go-kart industry. It's like all these things start coming together. And then the dude drops, hey, it'd be great if you guys could do this. And I'm like, Justin's working on that. He just got back from sabbatical. He's working on that. And then he goes super geek on us and drops this script that he wrote. And that was just it was a really cool story for me. That was feeling, to be honest, an emotional week for me. I've been dealing with neck stuff and hearing good news and, knowing kind of bad news might have been coming, and I heard that and I was like, dude, life is good. So with that, I think I want to leave some time for you to go, be with your family. Let's wrap up with a couple things. So outside of Toolpath and the work you're doing here, which is a ton, is there any fun things you're doing at the house, at the projects and stuff like that?
Yeah, they're always house projects. I took a sabbatical or a break from house projects this summer because we really just wanted to like focus on the kids. And when we first moved in, I ripped out the entire kitchen during my 6 week. I can't do that again. And as we moved our son was just born. He was like 10 days old. So three kids and no kitchen. So I'm not allowed to do that again. I find myself out here after the kids are in bed and Bree's, either in bed or watching a Netflix show or whatever. I'll come out here and this is my Netflix show. I get to, this is how I wind down. And you get it, Tim. We're weird.
I do.
Geeks. I do. Yeah. So I would say this is kind of my hobby, passion. And sometimes if I'm learning something at work, I'm like able to, like, especially when I was doing stuff like with the Xometry jobs and stuff, I started applying kind of like that process and thinking and like, zero point system. I didn't really know much about it. And then I tried to do it in my machine and I've never looked back. So
yeah, that's cool. Part of my role change now is I basically hide in the shadows and I've been running my machine. Carol's been helping me run my machine. I should
shout out Carol.
A shout out freaking Carol, man. She is ready for me to be healthy again. I still can't load a tool.
She burn your brace yet? I figured that would have been thrown out or burned.
No. I still have to use it when I'm sleeping and driving, getting driven around. Yeah. But she's still nervous. But so I've been doing a lot of machining in the garage. And my little Haas, we have two, has more time on it now than it's had in a long time. And it's been fun for me. It's been really fun. I've had a couple times in my life, like, this is what I should be doing. I was pretty bummed kind of leaving the team you're on. And now I basically hide in the shadows and write tickets for things that should be better. And it's pretty rewarding on the other side of that because I've seen the product get better and better and better. Yeah. So, Ben, I don't think we need to talk about much more.
Good.
I appreciate the heck out of you being, being on the team, taking the time away from your family to record this, and let's wrap it up.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Yeah.
All right, cheers.